All right, we'll open up the floor this time.
The guy in the red suit wants to know about the snow.
And the white beard.
All right, Bob, thank you. Glad to ask the question.
Sure.
There we go. And then Terry George in the back.
So what about the snow?
Well, there's no authority to observe the Lord's Supper outside of the assembly. And, I think the illustration of the Passover helps us to understand that. The authority of the silence of the Scriptures would be, there's just no Bible authority if we cannot make it to church because of snow or rain or sleet or hail. Or the post office forgetting to deliver something. We cannot observe the Lord's Supper at home with Bible authority. Now, having said that, and that's my view, I talked to you about the high places, and when Solomon went to Gibeon, the Bible says because that was a great high place. And he offered thousands of sacrifices there that God had said in his word, I don't want this. That was the night that God appeared to Solomon and said, what would you like for me to do for you? I think attitude certainly has a lot to do with it. But if we're going to go by what the Bible teaches, which is the thing we should do, there's no Bible authority for us to observe the Lord's Supper outside of an established church assembly.
I think that's right. But I would like to say this. I lived in West Virginia, too, with you, and we worked together. And you can get to church when there's quite a bit of snow on the ground. You and I both have done it. And a lot of times what I'm saying is if people worked at it a little bit harder, they could get there. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes I realize there's conditions that indicate they shouldn't. But, history tells us that when the Apostle John was an old man, and was sick and living in Ephesus, that four brethren showed up at his house on Sunday morning and put him on a litter and carried him to church. And he could have easily said he didn't feel like going, but he went anyway. And I think people need to have that kind of commitment and put going to church first.
I just wanted to say that I agree that I don't believe there's any reason to forsake the assembly. Sorry. I don't believe there's any reason to forsake the assembly if you have the opportunity and the method to attend the assembly, especially Sunday mornings. What I was considering here, I'm thinking about the idea, there's often times when I talk to people that you may go and attend a service with them at their assembly, which I would never do on a Sunday morning. But on a Wednesday, possibly Sunday evening, assembling with them and learning from them with the intent that they will come and learn from us as well. And you get that interrelation. And I relate it back to Paul teaching in the synagogues. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that and how you would relate to that.
Do you get to teach when you go?
No.
Then it's not a good comparison, Terry, but that's all right.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. I wanted your opinion on it.
Okay. I've attended, both Alan and I, both when we worked in West Virginia, have gone to various religious assemblies on a, even on a Wednesday or a Sunday night, but we knew we were going to teach. And there's a big difference between compromising and because you're offering to go with someone, and I don't see how that helps them. I'm just throwing that out there. You cannot use Paul going to the synagogue as an example unless you're planning to teach when you get there.
No, the reason I was stating that was in turn, they were coming to our assembly and learning from us.
Yeah, so I understood
the only
that.
Relation
yeah.
I was putting
yeah.
on that.
Okay.
you did an excellent presentation, and I don't know that I have heard much better on the scripture. I really appreciate it. And because I didn't really know how to explain some of the objections to this verse, meaning you can't miss one service, you know, sometimes people would make the argument that it was total abandonment, and I didn't know how to get over that. I always explained that we're commanded to observe the Lord's Supper, and that's a congregational activity, and if you don't assemble with the Church of Christ to observe the Lord's Supper, then you're violating that command. Individual communion is not a, it's a contradiction of terms. And don't you think that's a...
That's correct. And, you know, folks can say what they want, but I'll guarantee you that if you know that the Lord is going to return on Tuesday at 12 noon, I'll guarantee you that that Sunday before, you're going to be in an assembly of the saints, and you're not going to be in a motel room worshiping with a group of vacationers.
I had one other question, and that is, could you address the argument people make that when Jesus in Matthew 18 said, where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm there with them, means that three people can have a church on a boat or whatever?
Well, contextually, that passage in Matthew has reference to the apostles and their authority. He's showing that when whatsoever that they will bind on earth will have been bound in heaven. And he says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst. That is, you will know that if you apostles, it doesn't take all 12 of you, but if a couple of apostles are gathered together and they say, this is the way it is, he says, then you know that I am there with you and giving the blessing to that thing. I think that's illustrated by that situation in Acts when they discuss circumcision. Paul had already been saying, you don't have to be circumcised. He was one apostle. But when he got to Jerusalem and there were other apostles that were there, and they said, you know, you don't have to be circumcised, that settled the issue forever.
So that's not...
has nothing to do with the assembly.
The assembly of the church, right.
Right.
I agree with that.
Appreciate the study very much, Richard. I just had a couple of questions there. And you mentioned the stated assembly and then
the occasional assembly.
In Acts 20 and 7, you referred to that as the stated assembly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you view that as a stated assembly for the entire time, because they had the break there, if you will, to get Eutychus revived, and Paul then ate and then came back together? Was that the stated assembly for the whole time, or was that a stated assembly and an occasional assembly together?
No, it was just one assembly, Art. You know, you can't take some incidental thing. Somebody wasn't falling out of a window every week. And
we hope
so. Right. So that you had a stated assembly that was interrupted, but that was one assembly that was just interrupted.
Okay. And you mentioned about the Passover. I didn't really hear you mention about the Sabbath day and the fact that the Sabbath was that cessation of work in order to be totally focused on the spiritual duties to God. And do you see that as a type of first day of the week or assembly?
No, I see the Sabbath as a type of heaven, according to Hebrews 4. I don't see the Sabbath as being connected to the first day of the week. I mean, there's the only thing you could say, well, one was a day of rest and worship for the Jew, and the other is a day of worship for the Christian. But that's the only connection that I'd see.
Would you comment on the day?
As you see the day approaching? Well, I lean towards the idea that this was the destruction of Jerusalem. I do not think that Hebrews was written to Jewish Christians living in Jerusalem. But I do think that the day has reference to the destruction of Jerusalem. And there's a whole different study, but... You know, if folks get
to discussing the day too much, they lose the focus of the entire command that is there because it becomes a smokescreen. But the destruction of Jerusalem seems the most obvious. That's what they could see approaching. We can't see the second coming of Christ approaching. And the idea of the first day of the week approaching is that would be the least of the choices I'd have.
Appreciate your talk. As far as Hebrews 10:25 is concerned, I just want to make sure I'm clear on what you're saying. Is that in reference only to the first day of the week?
That's in reference to assembling, John.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
I understand that's
in reference to assembling.
So anytime.
Yes, I think it's anytime. The stated assembly, that which God has made an appointment with us, we would certainly carry that farther. Like, it's wrong for a person to get a job and miss the first day of the week assembly. But the individual that works afternoon shift, he's not going to be able to assemble on Wednesday night.
Well, the child of God definitely receives benefits from being at the service. I mean, we all can agree upon that. My question would be this. Is it wrong then for a congregation to cancel its service due to weather?
No. Let me back up. Are you talking about the Lord's Day service?
Well, I mean, if it's in the context of Hebrews 10:25, that's you're saying that's involving everything. Any service. So yeah. Is it wrong for a congregation to cancel service?
Any assembly other than the stated assembly is an occasional assembly, and the congregation, the leadership, can choose when that will be or if it will be. They have a gospel meeting, and it's for 10 nights. That doesn't mean when the meeting's over that because they don't meet on Monday night the next week that's wrong. So,
I was going to get your comments on... sometimes families began worshiping in their home. In the homeschool movement that I was involved with, there were a lot of home church people. And sometimes lay people will get disgruntled with the congregation. There's congregations in the area where they could be worshiping, but they choose to worship in their home. It's similar to those who worship in the hotel while traveling, but not quite the same. And your thoughts on that, and also your thoughts on a brother who takes a job in Timbuktu, and there's not a church in Timbuktu, so he becomes the church in Timbuktu. Is that considered forsaking the assembly, or is that to be recognized as a congregation there?
Well, I'm certainly there's going to be some disagreement here. If a family moves to Timbuktu, and I've heard a lot about this place, we need to get a church established there. But if a family moves there and they begin worshiping in their home, I have no problem with that. If they're going to establish a church there and they're going to evangelize the community in which they live. Now, if folks are going to move to Timbuktu and they're going to worship in their home, but nobody's ever going to know that they're Christians, and they're not going to try to evangelize, they are poor excuses for Christians, and I question their motives. But the first century church, when there was persecution, they went everywhere preaching the word. And if somebody has to move someplace to get a job, I think that's a good reason. Should they move where there's already an established church? Well, it depends on the individual. If he's not a strong person, if he's not already a church leader, if he never gets up to lead a song, if he doesn't give lessons, who does he think he is to go out and say, we're going to worship in our home? Who's he kidding? They're not going to worship at all eventually. But if he's a strong church leader and he's a good teacher, and he's got a family he can hold together, he can probably go and get a church established. We've got churches around the world that have been established by folks that do that. You know, Bill Page is the reason there's a church in Malaysia. And so I don't have a problem with that. folks that get disgruntled and leave here in the Oklahoma City area and decide they're going to meet in their home, you know, somebody needs to talk to them probably. It's what's their motive or their attitude? Because if they're just going to do it for a few weeks or months and then go back to another assembly, it's clearly not right. I mean, we can see that.
Thank you for your talk, Richard. In verse 25 marks the end of the paragraph in the New King James Version that I have. But verse 26 starts out with four. I'm wondering if you would comment on what the relationship is between 26 through 29 and verse 25.
Well, 25 is the transitional verse that goes from, you know, words of encouragement, and then verse 26 starts with the warning of the consequences of apostasy. So you've got that, you know, that's the 25 serves as the pivotal verse in that. Notice he says, provoke one another to love and to good works. And so when we're talking with folks about the assembly, we need to do it in a way that shows that we're sincere about what we're saying and that we have a concern for them. I've seen brethren get up on Sunday morning and they'll say, well, we've got a good crowd here this morning. And if you folks really love the Lord, well, you're going to be back tonight. And I hear them, and it's just the tone of voice, and I think, boy, that's going to get them back in here. There has to be some sincerity. You can't use sarcasm. You can't use a very self-righteous attitude and think that you're going to encourage your brethren to be at the evening services.
I had a question. I was still kind of puzzled. You said that, you know, if, like, say you're snowed in, that you couldn't, you know, partake of the Lord's Supper. Now, is that in reference to, say, one individual or, say, a family of all believing members of the family?
That's in regard to a family, because they don't have an assembly to go to. I mean, they can't just say, oh, well, we can't make it to the assembly, so we're just going to play church at home. What they can do, they can sing at home, they can pray at home, and they can read the scriptures at home because they've got Bible authority for a family altar, but they can't give at home. What are they going to do with their contribution? They're going to take them the next Sunday and drop it in the church plate where they couldn't make it. And by the same token, you see, they're not authorized to observe the Lord's Supper outside of the church assembly. A family that is for some reason cut off from the assembly because of foul weather, the rain washes the bridge out, or you get, you know, 4 or 5 feet of snow, or there's a wreck on the interstate and you're sitting for hours in line waiting to get to church. You can't make it. Those are you know, things that you have no control over, and so you're not going to be able to observe the Lord's Supper.
Appreciate your thoughts, Richard. I wanted to ask you for your thoughts on 1 Timothy 4 as it pertains to those of us that want to be leaders in the church, that desire to be teachers and those types of things. Where Paul tells Timothy in verse 12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and purity. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Now, I know Paul's talking specifically to Timothy on verse 13 about giving attention to reading, to exhortation. But does that serve as a Bible pattern for those of us that desire to teach? I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
You didn't make it to the morning service? Or? This man here and that man back there both spoke on this subject. So I'll let either one of them deal with it. Here, I mean, I've got thoughts on it, but they gave excellent presentations. So one of you brethren, go ahead and answer it.
Who's the other one you're talking about?
Brett talked about it.
You're closer to him.
Your question is that apply to us, apply to the teacher? Is that?
Well, those that even just have a desire, not necessarily somebody that is a teacher. My point is that, you know, we're talking about assembly together, mm-hmm. and forsaking the assembly. I'm trying to just focus on this desire to teach this guy. That I don't want to say war, I want to put it that way, to kind of make it sound like I'm, that it's okay in this church. But this, I'm just asking that it serves a pattern that, you know, we need to make a really hard effort to be there in the church assemblies.
I think so. I think the other passage is Ephesians 4, 12 through 6. He says, be an example to the believers. And so, you know, we understand how important every assembly is. What I tell the folks back home is, we never know if, our teachers back home, we never know if something that we teach on at this particular service may make the difference eternally to someone in the audience. And so the teacher has, you know, if the teacher is not going, that just gives more people an excuse to follow the wrong example. And in Ephesians 4, verse 12 through 16, we don't really spend as much time as perhaps we should anyway with one another, but that's another opportunity to be working and fulfilling the responsibilities of Ephesians 4. I don't know if that answers it.
Yeah, sorry. I could have answered that. I thought, well, these guys have studied this more. I do think the reading there, by the way, Brett and Alan, one of you said something. I think that's public reading. That's public reading of the scriptures. Yeah.
It was mentioned earlier that one could go and try and begin a congregation to accommodate such as a job need or something like that. Are there specific reasons or areas where authority is given for beginning a congregation, or it may be better asked, are there specific things that where one would not have authority to begin a congregation?
If one is qualified to begin a congregation, then he could begin it any place in the world, because that's the field of operation that we've been given. Jesus said, go into all the world. And so I have no problem if someone is qualified to do so. If they say, I'm going to someplace that's, you know, where there is no church, and I'm going to work to establish a church. There's brethren that do that. And I made reference to my son, Jonathan, who lives in Tampico. 3.5 years ago, when he and his wife and two children moved there, there weren't any Christians living in Tampico. There's, I think, 60-some that meet there now. But he's been blessed in the work. But he was qualified to go do that. There's some folks that would have said, well, there's one man that calls me on the phone a lot and says, I want to move to Mexico, and I want to work and start churches. And he's not qualified. He doesn't even know Spanish. And I said, you'll go down and get yourself killed is what you do. But so you have to be qualified for the work.
If I may, real quick, that kind of reminded me of my question in a different way. You know, if, like you said, if a family goes to try and start a congregation, if they have not succeeded in converting anyone, like by First Lord's Day there, are they authorized to partake of the Lord's Supper, even though it's just that one family?
Yes, they're there to establish a church. So, how long, Jerry Cutter, how long were you and your wife in overseas there in Africa, when you was in Rhodesia, before you converted somebody right there in Rhodesia? Yeah, a few weeks you were there. But see, Jerry went to establish churches and to work. You went originally to work in another country, is that right? But
I went to regenerate the work in Malawi.
Yeah.
And so we started in Zimbabwe now, Rhodesia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we were there a while. We baptized in the yard boy, and he brought his relative, and we baptized him. And they led us to some of the brethren there in town, and we just it just began to grow. But it wasn't the first day.
Right, that was my point. But here was a man that was qualified to do the work, and he and his wife were going to worship there for the duration till they would accomplish what they had set out to do.
I guess my point was, how is that different than, you know, just being snowed in? I mean, is it just because that's their purpose of starting the congregation? Or?
Yes.
I didn't know if that was the qualifying point that made the difference.
I don't mean to give a million different scenarios, but I feel it would be different with the weather, which is beyond our control, and say a broken down vehicle on the side of the road, whether or not to stop and help them, which is not beyond our control. Would it be all right? I don't know, let me just give you an example. I stopped to help someone with a flat tire. You know, if I was 2 minutes late to the assembly, or if I missed the assembly, what are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
Well, you know, Brian, there's if we see people that are in need and there's no one else to help but me or you, as the scenario would be, then, you know, if it's a true need, we stop and help. Now, I see a difference between stopping to help older people that are not able to change a tire and some 24-year-old girl that doesn't know how to change the tire because her daddy didn't teach her or something. And so, you know, I'm just saying you have to weigh, you know, how great is this need as to what I'm doing. If you feel that someone would be in danger, then if you don't help them, certainly then you owe it to them to help them. But you don't drive around on Sunday morning looking for people with flat tires.
So it would be kind of a judgment call based on a sense of urgency and a sense of unexpectedness, maybe.
Yes. You would say. Yes.
Maybe you mentioned this earlier, but there's been a lot of these kind of questions like we just had. And it seems to me when we look at, like, Paul in Acts 27, the voyage to Rome, 14 days at sea, obviously can't assemble with the saints. John, exiled on the Isle of Patmos. These are extreme situations, way beyond their control. And you know, I think we need to limit our reasons for missing the assembly to extreme situations and not, you know, like the car. Well, if we've known that car had problems and we just keep going on and then it breaks down, that's really not a good reason. We should have got the car fixed and other things like that. So I think, you know, seek first the kingdom of God. You know, if our priorities are right, we're going to do everything we can to be there and not miss unless it's some extreme circumstance like what we see in the scriptures. So just thought I might throw that in.
I want to get back to the 24 and 25 verses.
Okay.
A method of teaching is used there that's fairly prevalent in the New Testament, and that is a command is issued and then participles are used to show how to fulfill that command. And that's what's happening here in verse 24, where he said, "And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works." That's a command. And then you have a negative participle, not forsaking the assembling of yourself. This is showing how to fulfill that command that's issued in verse 24. And then exhorting one another is the second way that it is shown.
Benny, while you have the microphone, I mean, we've got a few minutes. I want you to explain the word that's used there and the event that occurs tonight. There's a full lunar eclipse that will occur at 2:17, I think, tonight. And tell folks about this.
All right. I understand that the word that is translated, not forsaking the assembling, is the same word that is used to translate eclipse. Because back there, they thought that when the sun or the moon was eclipsed, that it had forsaken them. But it didn't last long. And it came back. And so sometimes people say, well, it's all right for us to miss one time. And, you know, to go fishing or something of that nature. Well, I don't think that that teaches that at all. And it's like God forsaking Jesus on the cross that you brought up, where that word is used again. That didn't last very long. But it was still a forsaking.
Yes.
And if somebody misses one time to go fishing or some other small reason, then they have forsaken the assembly. It doesn't, while it does mean abandon, it doesn't mean that all of the time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. He told me all about that lunar eclipse that before the service and was trying to get me to incorporate that, and I said, Benny, I can't do that. I couldn't explain it as well as he did, first of all.
Another Hebrews 10:25 that later says in 22:50 in the selection says that manner of life means,
pardon me,
as prescribed by law.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And then Thayer says in 1485, on that day, it says Judgment Day. And then let me ask you this question. Do you think that Paul was saying, he wrote that in about 67, about 3 or 4 years before the fall of Jerusalem. Do you think that he was saying, now I want y'all to go to church every Lord's Day until 1970, I mean until 70 A.D., and then after that you can do what you want to? I think he's saying, from that day until Christ comes again, you're assembled on the Lord.
There are folks that hold the view that you've just presented, Cliff. Well, I think that it's important for us to stir one another up to love and good works. And by the way, immediately following that, he's talking about assembling ourselves together. So it's good for us to, you know, talk to one another about the assembly and make the assembly something that is, that folks want to come to. We as leaders need to make it something that people want to come to. I sometimes wonder about the song leaders and the teachers. You know, a teacher will come sometimes and say, you know, we've got visitors here and I didn't study for a very good lesson, and so will you teach? And I'm always glad to do that, but I think, wow, you expected, you know, what about us? Are we just chopped liver if we didn't have visitors while you were going to give us a you know, some sort of cheap lesson? And by the same token, song leaders, you know, if we should make church a place that people want to be. And, of course, then the other side of the coin is we should want to go to church regardless of what everyone else is, because it's not about you and me. It's about serving the Lord. And if you have that perspective, then you're going to be at this the assembly.
Thank you.